More to the Story, a show that explores what's happening in the world from a Christian perspective. Subscribe on the platform where you're enjoying the show, or go to freegrace.in to subscribe for email notifications of our releases. More to the Story with Lucas Kitchen.
Hey everybody, welcome to More to the Story. I'm Lucas Kitchen. So, as you probably know, I love rockets. I've never ridden on one. Very few people have. But I couldn't help but open the show with a little segment about a rocket, because this is kind of a new thing. This is pretty cool. So over the weekend, a private German rocket lifted off from the Arctic and reached orbit. Now, we don't normally send rockets from the Arctic, so it's kind of unique just within that. But it's also unique because it's the first time for a fully commercial European space launch vehicle to go from Europe. So that's pretty exciting. It shows that the commercial rocket industry is expanding, you know, not just in the United States, as we know about with some of those famous companies, but also throughout the world, which is really exciting to me. You know, God created this universe, and I think he wants us to explore it, and I'm excited to think about what that might look like. Now, that's not to say that all who are doing rockets are Christians or believers of any kind. They might be, they might not be, but I think all exploration leads to more glory for God in one way or another, so that's pretty cool. So on this rocket that went up from the Arctic, a few small satellites rode along. So it was, there you go, a commercial flight, so that's how they pay the bills, basically. Now this is not the first time they tried, though. They tried last year, and it didn't work out for them. So this one worked, and that's really exciting. You can find that story in the show notes if you're interested. There you can read more about that. So, you know, I think it's valuable to just kind of remember as we think about these technologies. I like technology, and a lot of my algorithms have figured that out and are showing me these things all the time. And it's easy to kind of forget that that it's still God's world. You know, it's still God's it's God's creation, and we are playing inside of that. And these breakthroughs are not a surprise to Him, and they don't threaten Him. Sometimes we feel like they might threaten God because they threaten our view of a certain cosmology or theology, but they don't threaten God. God, I think God's in favor of these types of things, you know. So we need to not treat breakthroughs like, you know, it means now that we own the sky or whatever. God is still in control. Psalms 8, 3 through 4, I thought would be a good verse to add to this discussion. It says this: "When I observe your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you set in place, what is a human being that you remember him? A son of man that you look after him." It's a really cool verse because he's not saying you won't remember us or you don't know who we are. He's just basically saying, man, I feel small. I feel so small when I think about the heavens, you know, and we don't know what the psalmist really knew about the heavens, but it's like, I feel really small, and it's amazing to me that you care about us, that you think about us, like you created all this and you think about us, little me. So, you know, it's fine, obviously, to cheer a hard-won orbit from a European German company. That's cool. You know, we can all get behind those engineers that refuse to quit. But Psalm 8 still asks a much older and really probably more important question. So when you look at the heavens, when you look at creation, the work of God's fingers, the work of God's hand, you can say, what am I? You know, remember where we are in the scheme of things. What am I that God would think about me? Orbit is an achievement, but remembrance is grace, is kind of a way of thinking about it. Like getting a satellite into low orbit, it doesn't save anybody, but it is cool. But in another way, the biggest achievement ever won in human history was by Jesus. He did the opposite. Rather than going up to orbit, he, in a sense, came down from orbit. I'm not saying Jesus was actually orbiting, but he came down. He came down to us, kind of the other direction. So the big achievement wasn't us sending little pieces of metal up into space. It was the Creator who made space coming down to us and accomplishing what was needed for grace, which included dying on the cross for us. And so he died on the cross, and he did that in our place, and he did that so that when we believe in him, and not when we work for him, but when we believe in him, not when we do good works so that we can earn our salvation. That's not how it works. So when we believe in him, we have salvation. We believe in him for that free gift of eternal life. And so I love that any kind of achievement can remind us of his grand achievement. And maybe that's a way that we can, you know, that we can look at it. So the wrap of this, I guess, might be something like orbit is cool, but remembering what Christ did for us is cooler. In Jesus, we ought to remember to look up, and we shouldn't get a swollen head about what we're accomplishing, because he accomplished so much more. Hey, here's a neat story. I saw this on the secular news, actually, and so it's making its rounds. You probably saw it on Facebook or whatever, but I thought we'd kind of unpack a little bit about what this is. It's a garden that they found under the tomb that they believe is the location where Jesus was buried. So archaeologists digging beneath Jerusalem's Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which they think is the traditional site of Jesus's crucifixion and burial. Now, there's those that disagree, obviously, but this is the tradition. The early church kind of nodded to that location, and then they built things on top of it, and then they built things around the things that they built on top of it, and so on and so forth. So now when you look at it, it doesn't look like a tomb. It looks like a cathedral kind of a thing. But some archaeologists were digging through the floor, basically. Reminds me of a scene from Indiana Jones. And they found something that really is, you know, really is compelling. It's evidence that there was an ancient garden there, that there was cultivated ground. Seeds and pollen from vines and olive trees. Now, they didn't find actual olive trees buried in the ground, obviously, but they found traces of it. They found rock-cut tombs in a landscape outside the city. They think it was rock-cut tombs in a landscape outside the city. It matches the picture of John's Gospel. You remember in John's Gospel, it talks a little bit about there being a garden in that place, and that one of the women thought that he was the gardener. So there's some connection. Now, we got to be careful about saying, like, we know for sure now because of this that the Bible is absolutely true because of archaeology. And I want to be careful about that, because it's easy to kind of get into the mindset that we need archaeology to prove the Bible. The Bible is a set of eyewitness accounts. And so it actually doesn't need archaeology to stand on its own, but it always is cool when archaeology lines up with it, when it gives a nod, or gives a, you know, some confidence. And so I would say this gives a little bit of confidence, but it's a little. It's not a lot. I didn't have doubts that Jesus was actually buried somewhere, you know. And so we don't want to mix up thinking that archaeology either kills the faith or replaces it, or wins the battle altogether. It's just a detail. It's just a neat detail. Here's what it says in John, so that we kind of have the reference. It says in John 19, 41 and 42, there was a garden in the place where he was crucified. A new tomb was in the garden. No one had yet been placed in it. They placed Jesus there because of the Jewish day of preparation, and since the tomb was nearby. So it's in there. Yeah, it's in there, and there's gardening, and so that's pretty cool. I will say, though, let's be careful about going in real hard on, like, see, it's proven but because of this, and then, like, you know, sharing that as if that is the proof that finally you know, ends the debate, because a skeptical person can easily look at that and say, well, if that's the proof you have, that's pretty thin. And honestly, it is. It's evidence that there was some cultivated ground in that area. And there's reasons why there might have been cultivated ground apart from the account. So it is a support, but it's not proof. And we just have to be careful about mistaking that, because those who are on the outside of the faith and considering it and thinking about like maybe becoming a believer, we just want to play fair with the evidence. We don't want to overstate what is actually proof and what is actually evidence. But I'm excited. As someone who already believes, I'm excited that they just found another one of those details that corroborates the biblical story. And it doesn't surprise me, because I already believe it. I'm like, well, of course they'd find that type of thing there. But don't assume that this is going to be the thing that finally brings your atheist friend in. What they need, in my opinion, is they need that they need to be in contact with God's Word. They need to be in contact with Christians who love them, that show compassion, like real world, right now, Christian touches that matter. That's really, really important for those who are skeptical. And these sorts of things, like finding evidence of a garden in the place where they think that Jesus was buried, is cool, but it's probably not what's going to win them over. Although it's fine to talk about, but it's probably not what's going to win them over. So keep up the loving compassion, the conversation with those that are skeptical, and I think you'll see a benefit. So neat story, not the end of the story, but a neat little piece of evidence.
What do I have to do to be saved? That question should have a simple answer. Growing up in the buckle of the Bible Belt, Lucas Kitchen found nobody agreed. Naked Grace is his true life quest for that answer. Wit, humor, and a simple promise when the stakes were as high as they could be. Naked Grace, from Free Grace International. Find it at www.freegrace.in.
This one is a pretty jarring story. Over the weekend, an Amazon Air cargo plane ran off the runway in Miami, hit some vehicles, and caught fire. Really scary stuff. Several people died. More people were hurt. Investigators are still sorting out what went wrong. You know, the thing is, it was a busy weekend. It's Labor Day, and for all of that movement and all of that confusion, you know, it's really the miracle. The amazing thing is that we don't have more of these. It's amazing what the air traffic controllers can handle and what the pilots can do. And so this is tragic, obviously, but it's also amazing the fact that it's national, I guess I probably should say international news, is just a testimony to how amazing the system is that people have built. I'm thinking about this because tomorrow I'm actually getting on a plane and going to Utah. So it is a little bit jarring to see this. You know, for a little while the airport froze and crews were out trying to clean up the wreckage. It really was a blow to Miami and to, you know, to the industry at large. If you want to read more about that, yeah, I've got sources in the show notes that you can kind of see what was going on there if you haven't seen that story. You know, as we're thinking about this, you know, we're going into a new week and we're getting busy again. We've had our, you know, our holiday, and it's easy to just feel like, you know, my plans are going to pan out. I'm just, you know, I'm doing this today, I'm doing that tomorrow, and but for the people that were involved in this, it's this, you know, kind of horrifying reminder that, you know, sometimes my plans are not God's plans. You know, I have an idea of what I think is going to happen, but God has another idea. God is in charge, Now, sometimes I say God's in charge. He's not necessarily controlling every single aspect. I don't know exactly how it works, but I don't think he controls every little aspect, but he is in charge, which means he can salvage any circumstances for his purposes. And maybe we could even say he gives permission for the things that happen. And it's hard to imagine. It's hard to imagine how he's doing that, but that's my take on it, is that he's in charge of all of it. James 4:14 is a good verse to think about when we see these sorts of things. He says, "Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring, what your life will be, for you are like vapor that appears for a little while, then vanishes." You are like vapor. I mean, that's, man, our life is short. You know, it's even if you live your full life, it's short. And I know some folks that say, well, Psalm says we are guaranteed 70 years, 80 if we're strong. That's just not true. That verse doesn't say that. It doesn't guarantee anything. It's stating a general, you know, a general premise that a lot of people, if they're doing really well, if they're healthy, they'll probably live that long, but not everybody does. Not everybody that's healthy does. Even in Scripture, we see people that die, well, they die young, you know, they're not guaranteed that amount of time. And so that concept that you're guaranteed a certain amount of time goes straight in the face of this phrase that you are like vapor that appears for a little while, then vanishes. But even if you do live for 70 or 80 years, you live for a little while, and then you vanish. And it's so important that you have worked out what comes next, you know, that you've dealt with that by the time the vapor is burnt off, you know. So you have this vaporous life, this life that's gonna last a short amount of time. And it's so important that if you haven't believed in Jesus, that you believe in Jesus, but probably most of you that are listening have, it's really important every day to like wake up and be like, I'm vapor. So what is this vapor gonna accomplish today? Do you know that an entire industry was built on vapor? Steam power is all vapor powered. So to say that you're vapor doesn't mean you're powerless. It just means you're short-lived. But you can be part of what God's doing. God wants to pour his power into this world. He wants to do amazing things, and he can use you, the walking vapor, to accomplish his purposes. But it makes a huge difference that we focus on that we, you know, we set our minds in that place, that I want to be used by God. Now, if you're not a believer, obviously that's something that you need to get worked out. You need to get solved, because you are vapor. One way or another, you are vapor. But if you believe in Jesus, I guess we could carry the metaphor on to say the vapor lives on. You know, the vapor keeps on going. So that was a horrifying thing. And you never know what tomorrow will bring, but we need to believe in Jesus. And for those who have believed, we need to walk the vapor that we're given. And we need to remember that we have a purpose, and we should not waste our time. Did you see what's going on in Nepal? They had a horrifying, I guess it's been a few days now, but they had a national day of mourning just recently because of those catastrophic floods and landslides that they had a few days ago. So in the floods and landslides, more than 1,000 people are now confirmed dead. I mean, just, can you imagine that? 1,000 people? I grew up in a town of 12,000, so like a 12th of that town just like suddenly gone. I mean, I can't even fathom it. And then thousands more are missing. So that means that's 1,000 dead, but then possibly more, you know, thousands dead. And, you know, it's so easy to feel like insulated from this. You know, we're in the States. This sort of thing didn't happen here. So it's easy to just kind of feel like, well, that's them over there. And, you know, you hear about it. Flags are at half mast there. Families are still waiting to hear something. rescue teams are working, you know, around the clock to try to figure out where people are, dig people out of the wreckage. Still, some people are still being pulled out alive, which is pretty amazing. But that there's a limit to that amount of time that that happens, you know. So obviously you can find sources on this in the show notes. But it's really horrifying. And I'll tell you my experience with this, I heard about this a few days ago. And I thought, oh, that's sad. And then I stopped thinking about it. You know, I just moved on. It was like, it's not in my present. It's not in my face. And so I just moved on. And that's kind of how the news cycle works, you know, that they share the thing and then they just move on. And I don't blame the news. That's just what they do. But like, it's easy to just get into that mindset that like, this is not the end for those that are experiencing it. I mean, they're still pulling people out dead and alive from the wreckage. And it's just the beginning. I mean, it's years and years that they have to face this kind of, you know, rebuilding and the trauma that comes from this. Psalms 34:18, the Lord is near the brokenhearted. He saves those crushed in spirit. And so I don't know, I think my prayer for this is probably the same prayer that maybe we ought to have anytime there's a horrific catastrophe. It's that this brokenheartedness, this crushed in spirit would draw people in Nepal toward the Lord. You know, I know that there's Christians there, obviously, but there's a lot of non-Christians, and I hope that this tragedy in some way draws people toward their Creator, that they're able to focus on the Lord and just be drawn near to Him. And so I'd say pray for Nepal. They're really wrestling through it, and they've got a long road ahead of them. So the Lord is near the brokenhearted. We need Him for those in Nepal right now.
Eustace Grimes is an idealistic cyber nerd on the run after his friends are murdered for their faith. With no ship and no money, he sneaks aboard a smuggler spacecraft to share an outlawed gospel before Admiral Strafe finds him. Missionary to Mars mixes humor with a grand space adventure. Family-friendly Christian sci-fi from Free Grace International. Find it at www.freegrace.in.
Thought it'd be fun to finish up on a nature story. Me and the kids sometimes watch nature shows, and we really like that. So I came across this one. It's kind of fun. The St. Louis Zoo, which, by the way, have you been to the St. Louis Zoo? We've been to the St. Louis Zoo two times, two summers in a row. We happened to wind up in St. Louis twice, two summers back to back. And the St. Louis Zoo is the one thing that we on purpose went and did again. It's a free zoo. St. Louis has all of this free stuff. I don't know how they managed it, but the St. Louis Zoo is cool because this is not in my notes. It's just things that I thought was cool. They had the World's Fair there, like turn of the century, 1900s, some early 1900s, I think. And or late 1800s. I can't remember. Look that up. That's an interesting one. But anyway, the zoo is built on that site where some of those exhibits were. And so some of those are still there, which is really nifty, to use an old world word. Anyway, that really neat St. Louis Zoo, which we love, sent newborn endangered red wolf pups to a wild pack in North Carolina. All of this story is interesting to me. Not only St. Louis Zoo is interesting, but there's a wild pack of wolves in North Carolina. I didn't know that. That's pretty amazing. The wild mother accepted them, which is also interesting. I would usually think that like a wild wolf mother would just eat the babies. I don't know. Why would I think that? I don't know anything about wolves, I guess. But they reintroduced these, not reintroduced, they introduced these pups into this this pack, and the wild wolf mother accepted them. Trail cameras later showed those zoo-born pups alive and thriving with their new family. That's pretty cool. It's a small, hopeful step for a species on the brink. I assume this write-up, on the brink of extinction, probably. I guess they're endangered. I really love nature shows, but I have no idea if red wolves are endangered. I guess they are. You can find the sources in the show notes. I bet in the show notes you'll be able to discover whether they're endangered. But this is just a neat story, and it made me think of this concept that I see argued about among like conservatives, evangelicals, and then those that are more liberal, sometimes liberal evangelicals, or even atheists, and it's like the. Like if you talk about extinction or endangered, for some conservative folks that bugs them, and I'm not exactly clear why, but it seems to bother some that say, oh, that's just a liberal agenda. But for me, and the way I think of it is like, you know, we were given instructions by God to take care of the planet. Now, the priority is obviously people, you know, and I think this is maybe what bothers some Christians is like some of the talking points we hear sound a little bit like we're saying animals are more important than people and people ought to just go and eat a bug. And, well, I guess that wouldn't be good because then you'd be killing a bug, but the humans can just go away and all the animals are what we need to save. And that's extreme. That's too far. But to say, hey, we should spend some resources on like trying to help endangered species, I'm all for that. I think that's great. I think that falls under the instructions that God gave us to have dominion over the earth and to rule it. And so I'm all in on that. I think it's interesting that, okay, like two ends of the spectrum, the super conservative Christian and the super liberal atheist, the super liberal atheist is most likely to complain about how species are becoming extinct and we ought to do something about it. And extremely conservative Christians, I feel like I hear more, things along the lines of, oh, who cares about extinction? At least that's the narrative. And I don't know if people are actually thinking that or saying that, but that's kind of the narrative, is like the liberal atheist would say, oh, Christians don't care about, you know, endangering species. I think that's probably not accurate, but that seems to be the grudge. That seems to be the argument. But in some ways, I kind of think the opposite ought to be true. Like for the extremely liberal atheist who believes in evolution and in some form of abiogenesis, for them, why would an extinct species be a big deal? That's just part of the evolutionary process. It's part of survival of the fittest, to use an old Darwin term. You know, it seems like they would say, well, a new species can just evolve. You know, like nothing's really lost. It's just an adaptation from another thing. On the other hand, it seems to me that the Christians on the other end of the spectrum probably ought to be saying, well, hey, God created all of these kinds of animals. Kind is the word used in Genesis. So he created these kinds of animals. And like, I mean, don't you think he cares a bit about them? You know, I mean, think about Jesus talking about how God cares about the sparrows. He cares about people more, but he does care about the sparrows. I mean, he specifically says that. And Psalms 104:24, I have written down here, says, how countless are your works, Lord. In wisdom you have made them all. The earth is full of your creatures. I like that because it's like, hey, these creatures that are dying, it's easy for us to be pretty callous about it, but they are God's creatures. So it's good work to try to help them, you know. Now, if you ignore people and only help animals, I don't know, that's probably out of balance. That doesn't seem good, but it's meaningful work to do this type of thing. So so I happen to be one of those who's pretty, I'm a pretty conservative Christian, but on that subject, I'm like, no, we can spend some energy on, you know, the red wolf pups from the St. Louis Zoo or whatever. So anyway, thought that was a neat story to think about those pups going out into the wild and, you know, making a life for themselves, and hopefully they make it. Well, I suppose I should wrap up. Thank you so much for listening to More to the Story. As you notice, this is a little bit of a new format I'm trying out. We're going to see if this works. If you like it, send us a message. You can reach me by sending a message through www.freegrace.in. If you want to look at the stuff that I've specifically done, I've started to put that on a website page called lucaskitchen.com. I just kind of like a big old glob of links that you can get to the various things that I do. So if you want to send a message directly to me, not just our team, but to me, you can do that by going to lucaskitchen.com. There's a contact form on that page. I'd love to hear from you. I'm trying to figure out what is useful for people. And I like the idea that this format would have us be a little bit informed about what's going on in the world, but help us to continue, as we're being informed, to set our mind on Christ and remember what it is that He wants us to be focused on. So thank you so much for listening today, and let me know how I can improve the show. And that's it for this episode. The show notes will be in the description of the show, and you can get to all those sources. And that's about it. Thanks for listening. And I'll say, check out one of my books. You heard some commercials for those. Check out one of my books. It's hard for me to say bye. It's hard for me to say bye, but here we are at the end. Okay, I'm going to do it. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening.
More to the Story is a production of Free Grace International. If you like this show, consider leaving us a review on whatever platform you listen on, and be sure to share with your friends. For more great content, www.freegrace.in.